We are studying once again in our series on the enemies of the heart. And tonight we're thinking about anger as one of our enemies. And remember, we said in this series that we're doing on our family fellowship nights that our heart is where everything runs through. And so it's like this complicated interstate junction that things come into our mind, into our eyes, into our ears, and we perceive those things, but then we run them through our heart. And that's complicated because, just like in this junction, everything that's been in our heart, all the emotions and experiences and the things that we've had in the past, maybe with that same person, or maybe even some baggage that we're carrying, then comes back out of that junction changed. And so, just like if you were to go into this interstate system here, and you were to be leave happy after you spent a while there or got lost going through it or confused or were delayed in traffic, you're going to probably come out of it different. Well, that's how it is with our heart. Things go in, but then they come out because they're shaped by our heart. Therefore, we need to be like Jesus taught us, to be pure in heart. We have to always be concentrating on our heart. So we're looking at some of the enemies of our heart that affect how we relate in our relationships. So a damaged heart will always affect an individual's ability to initiate and maintain intimate relationships. So we talked about jealousy. We talked about what jealousy does to us in our relationships. And then tonight we're talking about anger. And this is one that is significant because I think a lot of us struggle with it in various ways. And what we probably don't consider about anger is that, we often think about anger as, an emotion that we get in the heat of the moment. And we may not think about how anger is, often processed and is lingering with us deep in our heart. Now, we have this in our vocabulary. We'll say that person is an angry person. They're an angry person. What do we mean by that? We mean that, not that they just got mad because the waiter didn't bring their food, but what we mean is their overall conduct in life is that they're upset at something. There's something that happened in their past that is causing them to be angry. It's affecting their heart. And then when the waiter doesn't bring their food, they're upset at the waiter. But it's not just because he didn't bring the food, but because they are bitter and they're angry with the way they see the world. And so tonight we want to think about what causes us to have that in our heart and how do we deal with it as it's in our heart. I want to read something by way of introduction. Of course, we're using Andy Stanley's book, Enemies of the Heart, as kind of the primary guide, but I read something else that from this book by Gary Chapman. And he illustrates what anger is. He says, Brian, a high school student, is angry at his teacher who gave him a D on his report card. Liz, Brian's teacher, is angry with her ex for failing to send child support. Maria, an 85-year-old grandmother, is angry with her oldest son, who seldom comes to see her. Her son, Vincent, is angry in general because he can't find a job and feels rejected by society. Marvin, a preacher, is angry with the elders who always shoot down his best ideas. Bethany is only 3 years old, but she's angry with her mother who took away her favorite toy. Think about it. Most anybody you meet has experienced at times and are maybe angry at someone at any given time, right? We can all struggle with anger. And so anger is going to be, in this book, he breaks these down into four basic emotions and four ways we look at this. And as he thinks about them, of course, he says guilt, which we've already covered, is I-O-U. And so when you act out of guilt, you're always thinking about how you have made a mistake and you owe someone else. And then, of course, jealousy is God owes me. And really what jealousy is, as we talked about, is I'm not getting what other people deserve, and therefore God is the one who owes me. And then tonight we're talking about anger. And really when we get angry, to kind of put it on the most basic, simplest level we can put it, and I'm not saying this is true in every case, but trying to boil it down, anger involves us not getting what we want, us being upset that we don't get what we want, and therefore we're angry. I could illustrate this well with my three-year-old, because toddlers are going to struggle with this, right? Tonight, Caleb wanted to wear his long-sleeve shirt with his red vest. That's just one of his favorite outfits. You probably saw him wear it every Sunday just about through the cold winter months. Well, he decided he wanted to wear that to church tonight. And I said, no, we're not going to wear that. And he got a little angry about that. He moved on pretty quickly. But that's anger, right? And so he didn't get what he wanted. And he was upset because you owe me. This is what I want. I deserve this. This is how we feel. And so where does anger come from? Anger is a strong passion or emotion or displeasure and is usually antagonistic. It's excited by a sense of injury or injustice. So where does anger come from? Well, God gets angry. And the point I want to make in answering this question is that anger comes from who it is and how God made us and who God is. Anger is not wrong. In fact, the Bible says in Ephesians chapter 4 that the problem is when we allow anger to produce other things, right? Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Be angry and sin not. And so there's a point, there's things that we should get angry about. God gets angry at wrong and injustice. Excuse me, God is holy, 1 Peter 1:16. He is love, 1 John 4:8. God is never said to be angry in his essence. He's not anger like he is holy and love. But it does say some 375 times in the Old Testament that God is angry. He's angry at Israel because of their sins. In fact, Psalm 7 verse 11 says God is angry with the wicked every day. And in the New Testament, Jesus in Mark chapter 3, 1 through 5, John chapter 2, 13 through 17 are just two examples. One, in Mark 3, he gets upset with the Pharisees when they did not want him healing a man who had a withered hand on the Sabbath. And he gets upset in John chapter 2 when they are abusing the temple. And he goes in and he makes a cord of a whip. And he goes in and cleans out and overthrows the tables and runs the animals out of the temple. He was angry. He was upset. So anger is the logical response to injustice and unrighteousness. So God gets angry at evil and sin. Now we're created in God's image. We're created in God's image. And so anger occurs when we feel wronged. Now here's the problem. All right, God gets angry or upset at wrong and injustice, at evil. We need to have that same anger. We need to get upset. And we should get upset when we are wronged, when there's injustice. Nehemiah, we were studying this morning in our Bible class in Nehemiah chapter 4 about when he has been treated wrongly. He prays for God to bring judgment upon them. He prays for God to cause pain, basically, to them, for them to be put in as captives even, to take their problem away. And so notice that we can get angry about wrong things. Now follow me on this. We should get angry about wrong things. But the problem often occurs is when we, because we are humans and we are sinful creatures, our anger is often misplaced. We're selfish. We're prideful. We're short-tempered. We're not long-tempered like the Lord. And we often feel like we are wronged. We deserve better. And so we get angry, maybe even at a legitimate injustice sometimes, and we react. And so anger comes when we feel wronged. Anger occurs when we don't get what we want, what we expect, or what we deserve. All right? So anger comes when we don't get what we think. Now notice this want is not necessarily a selfish thing. In other words, we might want something that's good, and when we don't get it, and we feel like we've expected it, or we deserve it, then we get angry because we feel like we've been wrong. Let me illustrate this. I got a couple illustrations that we'll use throughout the night. One illustration that he uses in the book, actually on page 56, about Donald. Donald was a man who was working a lot of extra hours because he was in line to get this new promotion. There was a position coming open. It was actually in the Atlanta area to be a director over region. And he was at another place, and him and his wife were really hoping to get back to that region, the southeast region, and be able to get back to the Atlanta area. And he was in line for that, he felt like. And so he'd put in his resume for it, and his boss had encouraged him to do that. His boss was supportive of him in it and was giving him a recommendation for this. And this goes on, you know, as it does for a few months. And the position is open. He's thinking he's going to get it, hopefully, at least in the running for it. And about that, when it's getting close to making a decision and the other person retiring and things, his boss comes in and tells him that he has changed and he has put his own name in for that position. And a couple weeks later, a memo goes out to the corporation saying that his boss, who had a higher status in the company, received the position. Now, what does Donald do? Well, Donald gets angry, right? He's angry why? Well, he's angry at his boss. He's angry that he didn't get the job. He's angry that he feels misled. Why? Because he didn't get what he felt like he deserved, what he wanted. Maybe we could even talk about, well, maybe he might feel like he wasn't honest. But in the end, why is he angry and bitter about the situation? Because he felt like he was owed something and he didn't get it. And that's when we get angry. And we'll talk about short-term anger a little later, but bigger anger occurs. So this, in a broader perspective, you can see how this works and how it lodges in our heart. So someone gets married, they marry what they feel to be a good person, and that person is a Christian, but then that person begins to carry on an affair, or maybe he has a pornography addiction. They file for divorce. They're angry. Why do they get angry? Well, they've been wrong. They've been wrong bad. They have a right to be angry, right? They've been mistreated. But it's been 20 years ago. And they're still angry. Still angry. Here's a child, grows up. Father was abusive. Father was an alcoholic. And they're angry. They're angry at dad. Why? Because all the other boys and girls had good families. The other boys and girls had dads at their ball games. And other boys and girls had dads that took them. And they didn't have that. And they're angry. And they're 25 years old. And they're still acting out of a sense of victim, a sense of anger, a sense of I'm not getting what I deserve, what I'm entitled. And so they don't go on with life. They don't assume their own responsibility because of the anger that's in their heart. And that's what causes angry people. So it's not just angry over one incident that you should legitimately be angry about. But it's when you allow anger to nurse in your heart. When you feed that anger and you allow that anger to live. That's what Paul's talking about in Ephesians 4:26. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. I don't think he's talking literally there. I don't think he's saying it's a sin to be angry at night. But what I think he's saying is, don't allow anger to stay in your heart for days and months and years. You have a right to be angry. You're going to get angry at things. But it comes a problem when that anger turns to bitterness and hatred and vengefulness. You see, that's where anger comes from, and that's the problem that we're talking about with anger. And so what happens is, as you live out this story, your story will justify your anger and your attitude. You'll be angry and if anybody asks you why you're mad, if you really tell them your story, you have a reason of why you're angry. And it deserves, in your own mind, it rationalizes and justifies why you can act that way. because if they heard your story, if they heard your story, then they would understand. For example, another illustration, then we'll move on to how we deal with it. Story that was also used in the book that I think we could apply in a lot of different ways and we all could understand is a story of Margaret. And Margaret was a young lady who had an eating disorder. She went to a counselor. She was a young lady in her 20s at this time. She went to a counselor. The counselor was acted very inappropriate to her and raped her through a counseling session, through the process of that counseling. She struggled to get that out. She did get it out. And then it went into he said, she said, and criminal charges and all that. But the point for our lesson is this. For 20 years, she was then never able to engage in a relationship with a man. She would always sabotage any kind of relationship by being angry at the man and not letting herself get close to him. And so she wanted to be able to get married. She wanted to be able to go on with life, but she was never willing to allow herself to. And as she studied these lessons and heard and talked about anger, she realized that the main reason is because she was harboring such anger in her heart, not just for this man. Because here's what anger does. We get mad at an individual, but then we generalize it to a group. That's what racism is, isn't it? A lot of people, I remember talking to a man one time who hated black people. And if you talk to him, he talked about a story about where one or two black people were mean to him. He had a bad relationship with them. He had an awful relationship with one or two people. But then he had generalized that to every black person. It was like that. So he hated all of them because of some actions of a few. That's what racism is often, isn't it? That's what anger is. And so your story will justify your anger and affect your attitude. So how do we deal with our anger? Well, let's turn to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 31 through 32. Paul has dealt with, in verse 26, about not letting the sun go down on our wrath, not allowing it to be permanent. But how do we then move on past our anger? And so notice in verse 31 through 32, the Bible speaks about this concept. And it says, it says in verse 31, do not grieve the Holy Spirit by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander. All these things are things that we're talking about tonight. Things that deal with the issue of anger, bitterness and wrath, things that come out of being angry in our hearts. And then he says this, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. Notice verse 31 first of all. Paul is saying in simple terms, we need to get rid of these things. We need to get rid of something that in some ways seemed humanly impossible to get rid of. Paul, you mean, and think about those stories that I just talked about. Story of the man who didn't get the promotion. The story of the son who grew up with an abusive father. The story of the wife who her husband was unfaithful to her and she held on to it. Or the woman who was abused by the counselor. Think about what God's asking those people to do. Let all bitterness, all wrath, let all anger, let all slander, get rid of them. Put them away. In some ways, that seems like a verse where Paul did not live where we live. Well, Paul, you don't know what that's like. That's just holy talk. That's preacher talk. You don't really mean. If you understood my story, Paul, I think about Paul. Paul had a story, didn't he? Paul was beaten at every turn. He was rejected by his countrymen. He was suffered at the hands of many. But Paul says, let all wrath, all bitterness be put away. Get rid of it. And then I want you to notice the key here is, of course, forgiveness. He says, verse 32, be kind to one another, tenderhearted. That's the attitude we got to have, kindness and tenderness. Forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. The NIV says, just as. The New King James, American Standard say, even as. ESV here just says, forgiving one another as God. The idea is, if you just think about the first part of the verse, forgive one another. That's the cancellation, as we're going to talk about in a moment, of the debts. But when you think about the first part, you think, oh, that's going to be really hard to do, God. How can you expect me to do that, God? What's my motivation for doing that? But then you put that next, Paul really, he got us with that next phrase, didn't he? Just as, or even as, or as. In other words, your motivation, your rationale for forgiving, for letting go the anger, is that God has let go the anger against you. Think about it like that. Romans chapter 5 talks about that God's wrath is going to be poured out upon us, and that we are saved from the wrath of God. God's anger, God's wrath. The cross of Christ is where God poured out His anger. He was scourged and smitten for our offenses. You see, when you think about it, God is saying, you forgive. Why do you forgive? Because you have been forgiven. Now, we've studied it at another time, but I don't want to look at it in a lot of detail, but I want to refer to Matthew 18, verse 21 through 35. Because this is the parable Jesus tells, and in this parable, the main emphasis, of course, is upon forgiveness. And Peter, the parable is given on the heels of Peter asking the question, how many times should I forgive? And of course, Peter's probably thinking three would be good, and he says, you know, what about seven? He's going the good biblical number, and Jesus says 70 times seven. There should be no limit to your forgiveness. It's an attitude of forgiveness. And then he tells this story, of course, about two people who had debt. And one had a tremendous debt. And he goes to the king and he throws himself upon the king for mercy. This was a debt that in our terms was about $6 billion. And he could have sold his wife and his kids and things into slavery, but there was no way he could ever pay for this debt. And the king had mercy upon him and forgave him the debt. And of course, in our parable, we know that God is the king, represented as the king, and we are that servant. And that servant is forgiven that debt because of the mercy of God. But what does that servant do? That servant then goes out and he finds someone who had a much less debt, a 100 denarii debt, about 3 months of wages. If you were to put it in typical English, typical American funds today, it'd be about $12,000 to $16,000. And he goes out and he puts his hands on him and he says, pay me what you owe me. Pay me what you owe me. He demands that debt. And when the king hears about this, he goes and sends his servants to capture this servant. And he says, he was a wicked servant. He throws him in prison till he can pay the debt. And of course, he can never pay that original debt. And so the idea, he's in prison for eternity. And so I want to read the conclusion to the parable. Jesus says at the end of this parable, So also, my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. The emphasis of this parable, and you have the monetary units used to emphasize, what I really think forgiveness is about, and that is canceling the debts. You see, if we hold on to our debts, waiting for them to be paid, then ultimately, verse 35, we'll be paid. We'll be paid. But it's a payment of punishment. But if we cancel them debts, if we let our debts go, then we'll be set free. You see, the servant was set free of his debt. If he would have canceled his other debts, he would have been able to go free. But he wasn't able to cancel his debts, and thus he suffers punishment. Holding back forgiveness is possibly the most self-destructive thing we can do. Holding back forgiveness is possibly the most self-destructive thing we can do. It can cause bitterness and hatred, and thus it can even affect our eternal salvation. We forgive because we've been forgiven. Now let's talk about some more principles of how we should process our anger. And these first four come from the book in the chapter on that. How to process your anger. First of all, as you think about your anger, or you think about long-term anger that may even be in your heart that you don't even realize is there from years gone by, identify who you're angry with. Make a list. What is the reason you're angry with them so you can purge your heart? In other words, first of all, make a list and know who you're angry with. You know, a lot of people are angry, and it's been so long ago that it's just become a way of life, and they don't even really know why they're angry. They're just a bitter, angry person. You know how people get to be bitter, angry old people? They become bitter, angry middle-aged people or young people. See, what you are now is shaping what you're going to become. If you want to have a good attitude, a sweet disposition, and an accepting and loving, peaceful spirit when you're older, you've got to have that now and start to nurture that. Identify who you're angry with, but also determine what they owe you. This is a step that is often skipped when we think about this. But we will forgive generally, but not specifically. In the parable, they forgave the exact debt. You know what they did? But what did they take from you? In other words, in your situation, what did the person take from you? And generally speaking, we want to be repaid. And we're angry because we didn't get what we want. But here's the thing. Most of the time, the person we're angry at now can't give us what we want. How does a parent who is too busy, and children are angry at how busy they were, and the parent feels guilty over it now, but how do they give back the time? Can't give that back, can you? You have to forgive that. How does the alcoholic father who has come out of that and is now a recovering alcoholic, but how does he make that right for those years of alcoholism to his wife? He can't repay her really for it, can he? There's so many things you can't repay. I think it's always interesting in our court system when somebody does something and the court says that you're liable, how do we try to make them repay it? They'll come up with some figure that's set by the lawyers, which is going to be argued and debated upon, and usually it's some astronomical figure, and that money figure is never going to repay for that loved one that was lost, is it? It's in whatever the issue is, so many times we are angry because we didn't get what we want, and we want to be paid back. If we really think about it, it's impossible for us to be paid back. So you got to determine what they owe you and be willing to forgive specifically. General forgiveness doesn't heal specific hurts. What would they need to return to make it right? And then be willing to cancel the debt. Deciding the offending party doesn't owe you anything. Very likely they can't even repay you now anyways. That's the parable. Charles Stanley, in his book, Gift of Forgiveness, says that he sat down and had a conversation with his stepfather after he had passed. And he set a chair there, And he just told his stepfather, some people have done this in various ways, but he told his stepfather all the things that he had against him and all the things he was forgiving him of. And then so he could move on in life. Some people list it on a paper and then burn the paper. Some people bury it. Some people may nail it to a cross. Some people just do it in their mind. Not necessary to even tell the person. It's not necessary to even tell the person unless they ask for your forgiveness. But you've got to be willing to cancel that. Let me say, too, this is something that we often have to cancel on a regular basis. We cancel it, and then we have to remind ourselves that we canceled it. And that's the next point. We've got to dismiss the case. You see, our feelings will not automatically follow our decision to forgive. It is very important here to understand, I've taught this before, but I want to emphasize it again, that feelings and forgiveness are not synonymous. Somebody says, well, I don't feel like forgiving them. Or they have canceled the debt. They say, I'm forgiving them. But then the next morning they wake up and they don't feel it. We need to understand that we should not expect our feelings to be where our decision is immediately. It's going to take time for the feelings to be processed, for the feelings to get to where our decision has been. And so what I'm saying is, your feelings are not an accurate gauge. They are often the last to come around, but you remind yourself you're canceling the debt, that there's no reason to have payback. And so you dismiss the case. You quit waiting for them to pay you back. And you move on and let go of that anger and the bitterness and the hatred that you've been having. Well, let's change gears just a little bit in the time we have left and talk about, what about short-term anger? Because in some ways, you know, I've been talking about heavy stuff. We've been wading through some big life issues. And you may be thinking, well, Josh, you know, I don't think I've got anything swirling around in my heart that's affecting things that is anger like you've been talking about, that just really I need to forgive someone for what they did. But I struggle with just getting mad when the waiter don't bring my food or when something just goes wrong. It's like the poor fellow I read about who he went out to try to start it. And I can empathize with this guy. You know, he goes out to start his lawnmower and the lawnmower won't start. And then he just keeps trying to work on it. Pretty soon he ends up just getting mad and kicking the lawnmower. He forgot he didn't have on his shoes on, and he had on flip-flops, and he ends up cutting his foot and injuring his foot. And then everybody kept asking him, what happened to your foot? Well, what do you say there? And he just said, well, I had a little accident with the lawnmower. Well, you know, we can have that, right? We can get upset about something like that that just, you know, frustrates us. We don't have a lot of time. We get out there, we want to just mow the yard, and nothing goes right. We've all had days like that. So how do you handle short-term anger? Well, when someone just gets under your skin. Well, first of all, I want to give you, this comes from the book by Gary Chapman and some thoughts from the Bible. And these will be pretty quick. Number one, consider your heart. Consider your heart. In other words, if you find yourself always getting mad at your spouse, or always getting mad at your child, or always getting mad at your parents, or getting mad at the lawnmower or these inanimate objects, maybe there's something deeper going on in your heart. All right? Maybe there's a reason that you're snapping so quickly. And it may be that you need to look at your heart and think, "What? Why am I struggling so much?" And if it's another person that you're always angry with, and you're always angry, you know, you're angry because of just some little incident, well, maybe it's because of what that person has done to you on a deeper level months or years back. And it's hard now for you to relate to them or to have good feelings toward them. So when they do the smallest of things, then you snap because you're seeing everything through the lens of that deeper anger. So first, consider your heart. Number two, determine to restrain your immediate response. Those of us, people that struggle with anger, you got to follow Paul's advice. You've got to be angry and not sin. You've got to determine that you're not going to allow that emotion to overcome you. And anger often travels with curse words. It often travels with harsh words. Anger often causes us to say things we wouldn't normally say. And so you've got to get a time out. You've got to determine to restrain your immediate response, to get some space. And of course, you've all heard things like that. We try to teach our kids that you have to remove yourself from the situation. Maybe you have to just take a break. You have to, learn the situations, your environment that you can control and can't control. Locate the focus of your anger. So once you have gotten angry and you've kind of, you've walked away, think, why are you angry? Locate that focus of your anger. Why are you so angry? And what are you really angry at? And if you're like the guy with the lawnmower, you're going to realize, all right, I'm really angry here because I should have done the maintenance on that lawnmower. But I didn't do the maintenance on it. I neglected it, and now I'm paying for it. Why are you angry? Locate the focus of your anger so you can deal with it. And then analyze your options. Well, what am I going to do about it? If you're mad at your spouse, you think, well, why am I mad at them? Why am I acting that way to the person I love? And then analyze your options. Well, what's my options? How can I talk to her about this? How can I talk to him about this? What do I really need? What do they need? What are my options here? And then, of course, take an action. Don't let the anger stay there. Discuss, forgive. Maybe you need to forgive something small. Maybe you need to communicate. Maybe you need to, when we talk about analyzing your options, it might be confront, overlook, or try to understand. As we look over these things, let me make one other comment. Maybe you get angry at someone here at church. Maybe you get angry at me. Maybe you get angry at our elders. Maybe you get angry at a Bible school teacher. Let me encourage you to think about these things. Don't do something that's going to harm the church. It's going to create a scene where visitors see or things like that are going to hurt your children or cause you to pull away from the church. Don't do something like that. But seek to deal with it. Seek to talk to me about it. Seek to talk to the elders about it. Seek to talk to the Bible school. Seek to confront it. Analyze your options. Look at your own heart. But people have left the church because they get upset about something, right? Well, they're upset about this. Well, we all get upset at times about things that go on in the church. But handle it in a way that's going to draw you closer to the church and make sure you don't lose your faith. Don't lose your faith and don't leave the church over anger. Don't leave the church over anger. Take an action and deal with it. And so are you willing? Are you willing to forgive? Maybe it's a small thing you need to forgive. Maybe it's a large thing. But anger can ruin your life if you're not willing to let things go. If you're not willing to forgive, it can control you and cause bitterness and hatred. Are you willing to put things in the past and not let the sun go down on your wrath? This evening, if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you need to put Christ on in baptism, if you need to rededicate your life, we're going to sing a hymn to encourage you as together we stand and sing.